The parish is called Nitzavim. Right, this year it's a special blessing. Nitzavim is a very short parasha, and Vayelech is a very short parasha. So we read them on different Shabbatot, so you get home earlier. Now, in this week's parasha, in the parasha of Nitzavim, is Parashat HaTshuva. The parasha of Nitzavim includes the parasha of Tshuva, which sounds like it's about the mitzvah of Tshuva, but it isn't. It's about the fact that at the end of days, there'll be a national Tshuva, that we will all return to wherever we're supposed to be, which is in Eretz Yisrael. So that the parasha of Tshuva in Nitzavim is really about Geula. Geula, the physical redemption for Klal Yisrael. After the parasha, I mean, it's a wonderful parasha, we've talked about it at various times, but after that parasha, you have the following psukim. Ki ha-mitzvah hazot. The word mitzvah is singular, right? The word mitzvah is singular. A mitzvah, and hazot is what's called a dektic particle. Right? It points at something. The mitzvah that we are talking about, the mitzvah hazot. I told you it comes after the mitzvah of geula, right? Tshuva, parashat tshuva. Mitzvah hazot, asher anoch mitzavcha hayom, Moshe Rabbeinu speaking in the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, says this mitzvah, which I command you about today. Right, today is the last day of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Right, that's today. Lo nifleti mimcha. It's not beyond you. Niflate, maybe the word pele, wonder. It's not something that you wonder about. Lo rechokahi. In other words, there's some sort of havamim that people have when they heard about what their obligation is, that they said, how are we going to be able to do it? How are we going to be able to do it? So Moshe Rabbeinu comes to reassure them and says, Lo nifleti mincha, Lo rechokahi, Lo bashamayim hi, right? Which is a colloquial in modern Hebrew. Means it's not beyond you. You can do it. Lo bashamayim hi. It's not in heaven. Like what was the havamina? Like the havamina is the Torah comes from heaven. So maybe in heaven you could imagine such a thing, whatever the thing is we're talking about. But lo bashamayim hi, you don't have to go up to heaven. You don't have to be in heaven. You can do it. You can do it. Le'mor mi'aleh lanu ha'shamayim v'yikached lanu. To say, so you'd say, who's going to go up to heaven and bring it down to us? Well, I mean, it's hard to know exactly what it's talking about, because as far as we understand, Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven, so to speak, came down, and taught the Torah to Bnei Yisrael during the 38 years that they spent in the desert, the unnecessary 38 years, right, from the Chet HaMeraglim until the final entry into Eretz Kena'an, right? Mi yalel al shamayim v'yikachel lanu v'yishma'enu ota v'nasenu. Who's going to go up to heaven to bring us this Torah, and we will listen to it? And we will do it. And we will do it. I mean, it's again, the phrasing is very nice, but what exactly is being referred to here? They have the Torah. They have been commanded. Who? Why would they think they have to go up to heaven to get the...
Isn't that what says below?
Sikha?
That's not what says below. Below me'er aliyam. Right. As if to say...
It's not me'ever ayam, which is the same as saying it's not in heaven.
Right.
It's not in heaven. You've got it. Now, why would Moshe Rabbeinu have to say that? Of course they have it. That's what's been going on for 38 years. They have it. Why? So, imagine the conversation. They come to Moshe Rabbeinu and say, we don't have it. It's in heaven. It's beyond the seas. Means it's out of our reach. And Moshe Rabbeinu says, no, it's not out of your reach. You can do it. So what is the issue? What is the discussion about that Moshe Rabbeinu is pacifying, mollifying, making it more plausible for them? What is it? Who's going to go across the sea and get it for us and bring it to us? Because Moshe Rabbeinu says it's really close at hand. Your mouth, bilvavcha, lasoto. So now there's first a machloket about what these psukim are referring to. I told you that in the beginning, the first words are ki hamitzvah hazot, referring to, sounds like it's referring to a mitzvah. And a mitzvah that you could point to, which has recently been discussed. Now this matter is brought up in the Ramban. Like, what are we talking about? What are we talking about at this point? So Rashi is to the Ramban. If you look at the Ramban, you see this Rashi in the Ramban? The Ramban says, V'tam ki ha-mitzvah hazot. What is this about? Al kol ha-Torah kula. It was there some people who say that a mitzvah hazot is a shorthand form of all the mitzvot. Not a particular mitzvah, but all the mitzvah. But I say, the Ramban says, Hanachon, al kol ha-Torah yeyamer, kol ha-mitzvah asher anochi mitzavcha hayom. Right? In other words, when the word mitzvah refers to all of the Torah, so there's this preposition that the Torah uses, kol ha-mitzvah, all of the mitzvah. So even though mitzvah is still singular, and the word kol is collective, somehow it works out, according to the Ramban, that kol ha-mitzvah refers to all of the Torah. All of the Torah. Aval ha-mitzvah hazot, but in our pasuk it says ha-mitzvah hazot, it doesn't say kol ha-mitzvah hazot, right? It says ha-mitzvah hazot. So he says ha-mitzvah hazot al ha-tshuva ha-nizkeret. There you have it. A machloket in reading a pasuk. There are those who say that this pasuk, ki ha-mitzvah hazot, is about the mitzvah, all the mitzvot of the Torah, probably because it's kind of a little strange that the Torah should say what it says about the mitzvah of tshuva alone. Why would the people come and say, no, it's beyond us, we can't handle it? Or you could say something. You could say some sort of a svara, but the Ramban says, no, it's about tshuva. And he has a linguistic proof, because he says that when the word mitzvah refers to the entirety of the Torah, right, in such a case, it says, kol ha-mitzvah asher, and not ki ha-mitzvah hazot. So there are those who say that this pasuk refers to the entirety of the Torah, and that makes sense from the continuation. Lo bashamayim hi, lo mevayayam hi. People come and they say, how can we do it? You've got all these mitzvahs to do it, all these details to take care of it, all this, you know, you get it just a headache thinking about it, about all the obligations that we have accomplished. So Moshe Rabbeinu reassures them. He says, not so terrible, you'll get used to it, it'll be fine, you know, you'll keep Shabbos, you'll keep Yontif, and you'll blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. Lo nora. As complicated as it is, we'll work it out. That's what the conversation is about. The Ramban doesn't like it. Not that he doesn't like that, but he has this language problem, right? Kol ha-mitzvah and ki ha-mitzvah. So Ramban said, you must be talking about the mitzvah of tshuva, which is previously mentioned in the Torah. Right? Even though I told you that the mitzvah of tshuva that is mentioned in the Torah is really the mitzvah of geula, of redemption, but the Ramban doesn't mention it. It just seems to me to be correct. If you look at the Rambam and Rav Kook, in this case Rav Kook and the Rambam are pretty much tied in together, you'll see that these psukim about tshuva are about the ultimate redemption. Remember, there is that pasuk. There's a pasuk. It says, "Umol Hashem Elokecha et levavcha," that God will circumcise your heart. Meaning, I think. I mean, again, you know that explaining things in the Torah is tricky. Mm. So what it might mean is that God will change your physical, emotional being, that you'll be changed from the people who transgress easily to the people who really can't transgress, because it's so obvious to them that they should do what the Torah says. I mean, after all, the psychology of transgression for frum people. Like, frum people do averis sometimes. You may have noticed if you read the newspapers, which is not something I suggest because it's a little distressing. But frum people, like people who practice orthoprax people, sometimes do the wrong thing. So they probably justify it to themselves. Probably say, it's not so bad. Or I have a deal with God, or nobody's watching, or whatever they say. I mean, I'd say something. You know, most people are not going to just do an avera for the sake of doing an avera. They think they're justified. So in any event, that's the argument. Now, there's one other thing that the Ramban says that I think we should note, and that is, Vizeta'am, you see three lines from the bottom of the Ramban, Beficha uvilvavcha lasoto, the end of the pasuk. What it says at the end of the pasuk, Beficha, your mouth and your heart. So the Ramban says, Sheyitvadu et avonam, bet avon avotam befihem, v'yashuvu belibam el Hashem. Listen to the words. You should confess your sin and the sins of your fathers with your mouth. Right, that's what we call vidui. Right, the difference between tshuva and vidui is that vidui is something that you say. You have to say it. And tshuva, I mean, it could be internal. Like, you don't have to say anything when you do tshuva. So the Ramban says, he says several things. He says, first, you have to confess, and then you have to do tshuva. Right? You have to confess. A little strange. What do you mean, confess and then do tshuva? If you didn't do tshuva, why are you going to confess? Well, what are you going to confess to? But that's what we do. We do on Yom Kippur. You may have noticed that we confess many times on Yom HaKippurim, and we confess to every single sin in the book. Right? Which is kind of strange. Like, why would we want to confess to every sin? It must be something we didn't do. You know, nobody is that talented that he can do every avera that exists. So the answer may be that the words sometimes make it possible for me to remember things that I have forgotten or pushed away or tried to deny. So when I say the words of vidu, all these viduyim, I may be able to relate to something that I did do, but that I managed to push aside. Right? You know that the Torah has mentioned many times that forgetfulness is a serious issue. Right? You forget things. And you forget the Torah that you learned, for example. And that's prohibited. The Torah says you're not allowed to forget what you learned. And therefore, you have to review and review and review all the time to make sure that you don't forget. So forgetting, it's something that also connects me to sin. I forget. I forget who I am. I forget what I did. I forget because, firstly, I forget. And secondly, besides forgetting, I push it away. I don't want to remember what I did that is wrong. So we say Al Chait on Yom HaKippurim in order to bring up things that we might have forgotten. And we say the Al Chait twice, right? We say the Ashamnu, Bagadnu, Gazalnu. That's called Vidui Katzar, right? Aleph Bet Gimel Dalet, you know, Ashamnu, Bagadnu. And it's so irrelevant that we sing it. We're so happy to confess. But then we say Al Chait, right? That whole list of Al Chait, that's called the Vidui Ha'aroch. And there we actually explicitly mention every transgression that we might have transgressed. And that's good. It's healthy. It's helpful, but only helpful if you think about it, which I think most people do not. So that's the first thing that the Ramban says, right? That you do, say, vidui, and then you do tshuva. And then he says that you yitvadu et avonam et avon avotam befiyem. So this is like a recognition of the fact. You say, I do vidui, I confess my sins and my father's sins, or my father's father's, right? As far back as I can remember. Because I recognize the fact that I am a product of my history. Right? I can't escape that. There's something about me which was formed without asking my opinion. You know, I became that way. So that's what the Ramban says. V'yashuvu b'libam el Hashem v'yikablu aleihem hayom haTorah la'sotah ledorah. Do you accept at the same time the Torah to keep it for generations? So that's Umal Hashem et Levavcha. You have a promise. If you accept the Torah and you do tshuva, then the promise is that you will be in a different situation. You won't do the sins anymore. This idea that the end of days, whatever that is, I mean, I don't want you to think that I know what these things are that I mentioned. That would be bad on my part. But the end of days is seen as a time of illumination. And what does illumination mean? Like, what does it mean besides fluorescent lighting? Illumination is clarity. You understand something. What is it you understand? You understand what a transgression is. You understand what the will of God is. You understand why the Torah is important. You understand. Because everybody in a community has today like a different level of understanding. Not everybody's the same, but somehow in the future, the Torah promises that if we do our part, we give it a try, we will be able to understand. So That's what the Ramban says. So now, if you go, take that. Let's look at the Rashi. Rashi says again, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Forget about the previous Rashis. Karov Elecha Davar Ma'od. Karov Elecha Davar Ma'od. So what do you mean? I said I don't know. I don't get it. I don't get the Torah. I have to go up to heaven to find somebody who can teach it to me. I have to go across the sea to find somebody who can learn the Torah with me. That was the argument to Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu said, no, it's close to you. You can get it. You can get it. So what way? What was the discussion? What way is it close to you? What way is it not close to you? So Rashi says, you see the bottom? Rashi, Pasuk Yud Dalet. Yes? No?
Yes.
Well, the Rashi at the top, the first Rashi on the sheet. Ki karov elecha, haTorah nitna lechem bichtav ubaal peh. The Torah was given to you written down. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu wrote the Torah down 38 years. Right? There's a machlokin in the Gemara whether the Torah was written piece by piece, as Moshe Rabbeinu taught it, or whether the Torah was written all at once at the end of 38 years. But even if it was written in either case, it doesn't matter, the end result is the same. You have the Torah that is written. You have the written Torah. So karov eilecha ma'od, what is karov eilecha ma'od? You can understand it. So what does Rashi say? HaTorah niten lechem bichtav ube'alpeh, Moshe Rabbeinu said. After all, when I taught you the words of the written Torah, I also taught you the Torah Shebaal Peh. Now, I've told you several times, and I think it's true. Even though I've told it several times, I think it's true in any event. Every written word in the world, but certainly in the Torah, has a Torah Shebaal Peh, which is not exactly the same as what we call Torah Shebaal Peh today. In other words, if the written Torah says, Shamor et Yom HaShabbat HaKachor, remember that one? Aseret HaDibrot, Shabbos, right? So it can't be somebody there, Moshe Rabbeinu is teaching Shamor et Yom HaShabbat, somebody's got to say, how do we do that? I mean, in other words, the pasuk itself, without interpretation, makes no sense. So that the discussion, according to Rashi, between Bnei Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu, is Bnei Yisrael saying, "Okay, we've got the Torah. Here it is. It's all written down. But who understands it? What did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them? No. I've taught you the Torah Shebaal Peh of the psukim in the Torah." You do understand that you should understand that you will understand. What we call Torah Shebaal Peh, what we call Torah Shebaal Peh, is including further information, right? Information that doesn't derive directly from the psukim, but derives from the ideas, right? Whether it's about Yontif or Shabbos or torts or anything of that sort, there's a Torah Shebaal Peh which is found in the Mishnah. You just found that the Mishnah contains things that are not necessarily connected to the Pasuk. But when the Pasuk says, listen, you should put on tefillin. You don't think there was somebody who said to Moshe Rabbeinu, what's tefillin? What's totafot? They must have, but it couldn't be otherwise. So when Rashi says, Torah nita lechem b'chtav u'bal peh, I think that what that means is that the psukim of the Torah, the words of the Torah given to you, and also the basic understanding of those words, in other words, Moshe Rabbeinu is saying to them, you do have the wherewithal, according to Rashi, you have the wherewithal, you can understand, you can learn it, you're not going to be left in the lurch when Moshe Rabbeinu disappears. And you understand that was one of the major crunches that Bnei Yisrael were going through. Because as long as Moshe Rabbeinu was alive, they could always get the perfect answer to any question that they asked. But when Moshe Rabbeinu dies, who's going to be that? Who's going to answer the questions? Who's going to tell them what the Torah means for them to do? So that was the discussion, right? The Gemara and Erchin discusses that. Okay? So now, having said that, I want to look at another pasuk. We'll come back to this Rashi. Vayomer Shmot Perek Kadal Pasuk Yudbet, the end of Mishpatim. Vayomer Hashem El Moshe, Alei Elai Hahara, V'yesham. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to Moshe Rabbeinu, new topic, not new, but a new paragraph. New paragraph. That's the only thing I remember from French. Nouveau paragraph. We used to do dictée in French, and that's the only thing I knew. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe alei elai hahara, v'yeshav, come up on the mountain, be there. Now, listen, v'etna lecha, this has been a mystery, right, for generations. Etna lecha, God says to Moshe Rabbeinu, I give you Luchot Ha'Evan. Luchot Ha'Evan, what we call Luchot Ha'Brit, Aseret HaDibrot, another Luchot Ha'Evan, whether they were rectangular or they had a round top, but Moshe Rabbeinu had them, right? He had these Luchot Ha'Evan. And also, HaTorah VaMitzvah, Asher katavti lorotam, and also the Torah and the mitzvah. So I know what Luchot HaEvan are, I think. Luchot HaEvan are the Aseret HaDibrot that were chiseled into the rocks by HaKadosh Baruch Hu when Moshe Rabbeinu was at Har Sinai. Those are the stones that Moshe Rabbeinu came down the mountain to find Bnei Yisrael dancing around with the Egel HaZahav, with the golden calf. Right? So what is it that the words Torah, HaMitzvah, Asher Katavti, again, Asher Katavti goes back to, certainly, Luchot HaEvan. Luchot HaEvan were written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu the first time. The first time Moshe Rabbeinu went up mountain and got the Luchot HaEvan, they were written by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The words, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, etc. But what about the Torah and the mitzvah? What's the Torah and the mitzvah? So look at Rashi. Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. You see Rashi? Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Lachar Matan Torah. Matan Torah in English is the theophany. A revelation. Revelation, that's a better word, right? Revelation. But Moshe Rabbeinu goes over to Har Sinai. All the people are standing there. And suddenly everybody becomes aware of the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu might give a Torah to the world, to Bnei Yisrael. That's what happened at Har Sinai. The thing that happened before Moshe Rabbeinu, then Moshe Rabbeinu comes down, and Moshe Rabbeinu goes up again for the 40 days and 40 nights, and then he comes down again. But when Rashi says, Lachar Matan Torah, he means that. What we celebrate on Vav Sivan. Right, even though in the Gemara there's a machloket by whether it's Vav Sivan or Zayin Sivan, but it doesn't matter. We celebrate that day. What do we celebrate? So it all became mushed up together. We can't celebrate a revelation, but we can celebrate the Torah. And that's what we celebrate on Shavuot. Even though there's no mention of this celebration in the Torah, but we made it. We made it that celebration. Lachar Matan Torah. Alei elaya harabi yesham arba'im yom et luchot ha'em v'torah v'mitzvah shekatabti lo ratam. Listen to Rashi. Here's Rashi. Kol sheish me'ot shlosh esrei mitzvot v'chlal aseret hadibrot ein. So Rashi says, what's ha'torah v'mitzvah? 613 mitzvot. So you say to Rashi, oh, where are these 613 mitzvot? What do you mean 613 mitzvot? It says not that Moshe Rabbeinu learned the 613 mitzvot, but they someplace they were written down somehow. That's what it says in the Pasuk. Where are they written down? So he says, Rabbeinu Saadia, you know, the people had a very high regard for Rabbi Saadia Gaon, right, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Bavel. And he pirish b'azharot sheyasad l'chol dibur b'dibur mitzvot atluyot bo. So what did Rav Saadia Gaon do? He took the 10 mitzvot in the Aseret HaDibrot, and he showed that each mitzvah is like a heading. Each one of the dibrot is a heading for many other mitzvot. And he wrote a little book where he showed that all the 613 mitzvot can be divided into 10 categories. So when the Pasuk says that they were all written, it doesn't mean that they were written. It means they could have been written, or there's some kind of a shorthand code for which it was written. So the Pasuk that says, Etna lechad luchot ha'evan, fine. V'atorah v'amitzvah shekatavti. What do you mean, Asher Katavti? Where is the Torah and the mitzvah, Asher Katavti? Where is it? It's in what is written in the Aseret HaDibrot. Well, we all agree it's written in the Aseret HaDibrot, but the 613 mitzvot are implied therein. They're implied therein. Okay. So you know that in modernity, I mean in our time, there is not so much in our time. I mean, things. I wanted to figure out how to put this in a non-objectionable way. You know, there is this field of study in the called biblical criticism. And biblical criticism is about, how would I describe it if I had to? It's about applying general rules applied to literature to the Torah, for example. Not just the Torah, the entire Tanakh, but let's say the Torah. And there are kinds of strange or different conclusions that the critics might come to about the Torah than the position that we have generally, you know, religious Jews. For example, religious Jews have always said that Torah min hashamayim, that the Torah comes from heaven as it is described in this pasuk. And now, even though it's very hard for me to understand exactly what happened, nevertheless, we're all pretty much influenced by the Rambam, who, in his eighth principle, the eighth of the 13 principles that he enunciated, which are stated briefly in almost every siddur that was ever published, you know, after Shacharis. So the Rambam says that it's incumbent upon us to believe that the Torah that we have is exactly the same Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to Bnei Yisrael. That there are no changes. It's the same Torah. This is a little difficult to absorb, because in the sources that we have, right, the sources that we have, and in the Parsha of Nitzavim, happily I brought a Chumash along. In the Parsha of Nitzavim, there's a pasuk, "Anistarot Lashem Elokeinu." We don't have to worry about the secret events that people undertake. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu will take care of. But niglot, the things that are obvious, alanu ulevaneinu adolam lasot tikol debrei Torah azot. So if you had a Chumash, and if you were looking at it, you would see an interesting thing, that the words lanu ulvaneinu, have dots on them. Dots. Each letter has a dot. Now, what are these dots? If you go to the pot top near the Israel Museum, which has the Dead Sea Scrolls in it, right? Do you remember? Pot top. You'll see that one of the Isaiah scrolls in that museum has a different kind of, sometimes a different kind of spelling of words. But also beyond that, it also has dots all over the place. Dots were the way they erased. It was, if you write on parchment and you make a mistake, so it's a problem, because in order to erase, if you tell me here a sofa, you have to take a knife and you scratch at it until the word. But when you scratch at it, you scratch at the parchment also, and you could end up making a hole in the parchment. That you don't want to do that. You don't want to make a hole, because then somebody can affix a patch on the back and write something else. You want to prevent a further corruption. So the way you do that is you leave the wrong word, you put dots on it, which means that you erased it, and then you continue after that word. That's what they used to do. So if that's the case, it's kind of odd that you have these dots here in the Chumash. You have dots. I mean, what could that possibly mean? So in the Avot de Rabbi Natan, there's a conversation between Ezra Sofer and HaKadosh Baruch Hu about these dots. Ezra says to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "I tried my best. I tried to fix it." You know, when Ezra came back from Babel, Persia, right, Babylonia or Persia, he came back with a very large group of Jews to Eretz Yisrael. So each of them had a Sefer Torah. Each group came with a Sefer Torah. And the Sefer Torah that they came with were not, even though they were only away, they were away like between 70 and 100 years. But they had to copy and write new Sefer Torah. And they weren't all professionals. I can tell you that even today when a Sofer writes a Sefer Torah, and he does it very carefully, and he does it from a tikkun. He uses a printed text to copy from. And even if he gives it to the computer, you know, there's a computer that checks malei v'chaser, an extra vav, an extra yud. You give it to the computer. The computer always catches something, always catches something in the Torah that this sofer wrote very carefully. And then you put it in a shul, and the Baalei Kriya start reading from it, and 10 years later, they discover a mistake. The Baalei Kore, the Baalei Kriya, I also have a problem. When you're a Baal Kore, there's some kind of rule about this, but when you know what you're reading, you don't read the letters. You just read the words. It's easy. It just goes, the Baalei Kriya often know what they're reading Baal Peh. They know it by heart. So they read the right thing even though the wrong thing is written. It's today. It's hard to imagine. It's hard to imagine what they did 2,000 years ago. It was hard to imagine how they got it to be. But I want to talk about that. That's really like a miracle. It's a miracle that the Sefer Torah today have hardly any variations. But Ezra said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, according to the Avot of Rabbi Natan, Ezra said to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, "Look, I don't know. But if those words belong in the Torah, I've written them. And if they don't belong in the Torah, I put dots on them." That's what Ezra said. Because Ezra said, I just don't know. I don't know Ezra. Now we can look at these words and give two parshanut. We can say, what does the pasuk mean with the words, or what does the pasuk mean without the words? We could say that. We could say that. But Ezra didn't say that. Ezra said, according to this statement, the Avot Rabbi Natan, he said, I don't know what the right word. So it's hard to understand. It's hard to understand the Rambam's position that the Torah that we have is exactly the same as the Torah that Moshe Rabbeinu. This is all in this week's parasha. So I want to just go back. I want to go back to that Rashi. You see the Rashi in Pasuk Yudalit, Perek Lamed Pasuk Yudalit. Ki karov elecha, haTorah nitna lecha miktav uba'al peh. We all think, we tend to think, that the Torah shebichtav is fixed, and the Torah shebaal peh is movable. You know, it's like, but let's try to think about it differently. Let's think about it this way, that the Torah shebichtav, if there was only a Torah shebichtav, only, if there was only Torah shebichtav, we would never be able to keep it as it should be. We would make one mistake after another, and we would change everything about it, and we would end up with dots all over. Every place we'd look, we'd have dots. What does the Torah shebaal peh do? The Torah shebaal peh stabilizes our interpretation of the Torah shebichtav. So it doesn't make any difference, or it makes less difference. I don't want to be too radical here. It doesn't make a lot of difference, even if you could prove that there's a shift in the Torah shebichtav, as long as the understanding of the Torah shebichtav remains fixed. And that's called Torah shebaal peh. So the people came to Moshe Rabbeinu. They said, how are we going to learn? How are we going to keep it up? How are we going to keep learning? because people make mistakes when they copy. And then we won't know which is the right girsa, which is the wrong girsa. We won't know anymore. And since we won't know anymore, we won't be able to learn Torah. And what did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them? What did Moshe Rabbeinu say to them? B'ficha u'bil ki garove lecha davar. Ki garove lecha davar. This Torah Shebaal Peh. Don't worry. The Torah Shebaal Peh is fixed because the Torah Shebaal Peh is passed down through the superior students of Torah. I passed down Moshe to Yoshua, and Yoshua to the Skenim, the Skenim to the Nevi'im. That's how it was passed down. It wasn't Sofrim. Sofrim are people who work for a living. Oy, what a terrible idea. And they do think, and of course what they do is going to be corrupted. It's too difficult. The Torah is too big. There's too much at stake. But the Torah Shebaal Peh is passed down. The Torah Shebaal Peh is passed down from the great minds who are understanding of what Moshe Rabbeinu taught, and they determine what the Torah Shebichtav is saying. So if we paskin that ayin tachad ayin, you know, ayin tachad ayin, the Torah says several places that you knock out the eye of a slave, or you knock out somebody, you have to do the same thing. So the interpretation that we accept is ayin tachad ayin is mamon, is money. So that means that the Torah Shebichtav only exists in the world of understanding through the Torah Shebaal Peh. It doesn't exist at all otherwise. And that's why the Torah Shebichtav was put into the Aron Kodesh. Yes? And the Aron Kodesh was never opened. It just stayed there. It is an idea, the Torah Shebichtav, but the real of it is the Torah Shebaal Peh. So you could interpret the Rambam that way, that the real of the Torah Shebichtav is Torah Shebaal Peh. It's what the tradition of interpretation has to say. The tradition of interpretation corrects itself all the time. That's called a discussion. That's the corrective factor of the Torah Shebichtav. I want to look quickly at a little bit of the Netziv. You see the Netziv? The Netziv refers to the same at the bottom of the page. Let's skip this photo. Hamekdavar, the Netziv says, Beshu Chazal, I know, skip two lines. Achein, the third line, after the dot. Achein al kein ein kemo shehi ktuba lefaneinu. Eino kimoshik tuvalefaneinu. Share lo nishlema adayin, ela kimosha haitak tuvalefne Hashem, kula shmotav shelakadosh baruch hu, shebahem bara shamayim vaaretz. The Ramban says it, and the Netziv says it, that the Torah, there's a Torah behind the Torah. There's an immutable Torah, Shebichtav, an immutable Torah Shebichtav, a Torah that never changes, and that Torah that never changes is the Torah Shel Shmotav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Ramban says, if you take the letters in the Torah, Breishit Bara Elokim et Hashamayim et Haaretz, and you move them around, you get Shmotav Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, like you divide, you put in the word dividers in a different place, you'll get a different text. And that text is the secret text that HaKadosh Baruch Hu used to create the world. So that when we say that the Torah is immutable, we mean the ultimate Torah, according to the Netziv. V'alzeh amru in Avodah Zorah, Shitbasekat Avodah Zorah, Sha'ot Rishonot Shel Yom HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yoshev V'osek B'Torah. That's in Gemara. U'mevi Al kol ha-ma'amar mikra yomam yitzaveh Hashem chazdo. V'lo m'day ma'zeh chesed. Eze chesed yesh. What's the chesed of God sitting and learning Torah? B'mash HaKadosh Baruch Hu asek b'Torah. El ha-kavana da-Kadosh Baruch Hu maskir shmotav yitbarach u'mechadesh b'tuvo B'chol yom tamid maaseh bereishit. That doesn't matter. You like the idea, you don't like the idea, but what is it that the Netziv is saying? The Netziv says there is a perfect Torah. There is a perfect Torah in heaven. A Torah Shemichtav is a perfect Torah in heaven. It's the Torah that God learns every day, according to the Gemara in Avodah Zarah. Now, why is it that God learns the Torah every day? Because every day, according to the Netziv, accept this idea that every day is a new day of creation. In other words, the reason that we exist today is because God willed it. God willed that we should exist today. It's not like the world is a wind-up clock. You know, you just wind it up and it goes by itself. It's that God created the world and continues to create the world. And that world is created through the Torah. But I think what the Netziv is getting to is explaining to us that we don't have to be nervous about the fact that it seems sometimes that the Torah that we have is prey, falls prey to some kind of reinterpretation or strange or different ideas of the strange, different ideas, because in fact, there is the perfect Torah. There is a perfect Torah. That's what God is doing, and that's why the Chachamim said that God must be learning the perfect Torah, the Torah that is not corrupted, right? So that there is this idea that there are two Torahs. There's the Torah which is perfect that God is learning, and the Torah that is perfected by us through the Torah Sheba'al Peh. And so when the Jews came to Moshe Rabbeinu, they said, we can't get to the perfect Torah. We can't get to heaven, and we can't get across the sea. We know that there's a perfect Torah, and we know we can't match it. We can't match that perfect Torah. We're going to mess up. We're going to mess up somehow. A few words here, a few words there. We're just not going to be able to do it. So Moshe Rabbeinu said to them, no. He said, don't worry. Karov lecha davar mo. And so, I'm sorry. Bnei Israel said, we want to be that Torah, the Torah that God is learning, the Torah that is perfect, the Torah that you, Moshe Rabbeinu, know about. Right? That's what we want to learn. So Moshe Rabbeinu said, no. It's not true what you say. There's a perfect Torah in the world also. Not just in the world of God. But there's a perfect Torah in the world as well. And that's the written Torah which I've given you, plus the Torah Sheba'al Peh, as Rashi pointed out, because the Torah Sheba'al Peh is what gives the Torah integrity. Right? It tells you what the Torah really really means, and that's immutable. Anybody who's ever learned Gemara or Chazal knows that you could sit around and try to figure out how they get that, you know, how they get this drasha from that pasuk. But it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter really how they got it. What matters is that this is the proper statement about the content of that halacha or that pasuk, etc. So there, the Netziv adds on this idea, adds on that there is this perfect Torah in heaven which HaKadosh Baruch Hu is learning. And that's what Bnei Yisrael said. They said, we can't get to that. We can't get to the perfect Torah which is in heaven. We can't get to the perfect Torah which is across the sea. And Moshe Rabbeinu said, no. You have your version of the perfect Torah. And Rashi says that your version of the perfect Torah includes Torah Sheba'al Peh. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu brought down with him from Har Sinai in one way or the other. Right? Either he brought all the mitzvot, all the Torah, the first time that he came down from Har Sinai. The Netziv says in a later exposition, the Netziv says that the first time Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, it was all Torah Shebichtav. But the Rav Sadia Gaon explains it had to be somehow understood, something from something. But the second time that Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Har Sinai, it was understood that they needed the Torah Sheba'al Peh as well. This is a different section of the Netziv.